No mai, haere mai, ko Sandra Kailahoe, and this is Safe and Sound, Aotearoa New Zealand's animal rights show, broadcasting from Free FM in Hamilton and played right throughout this beautiful country of ours via the Access radio sector. I'll have a little more to say about Access Radio in just a moment, but first I'd like to remind local listeners that right here in Hamilton we have a delightful store which stocks organic and vegan food, and they have new products coming in every single week. That store is, of course, Village Organics, and they sponsor Safe and Sound. And so if you haven't already checked them out, pop in to say hi to the friendly staff, and they're opposite Hotel Frankton in Frankton Village. Access Radio. Now, I am so grateful that Access Radio exists. Free FM give me the opportunity to record the show every week on a subject that is so close to my heart. And I'm grateful also to the other stations, the 10 or so other stations, that play it every week. There is no animal rights show on mainstream media at all. In fact, in the past, I've contacted both broadcast and print professional media to ask if they'd think about a regular program or a column, and was declined in all cases, virtually ignored. Their response reminds me that journalism doesn't create movements. It records them, it follows them, usually dispassionately. But Access Radio affords the opportunity to anyone and everyone to become a broadcaster, to provide a platform for their own communities and further their causes. People willing to do this work every week are usually close to the heartbeat of their communities and the issues they face, whether it be in arts and culture, children and youth, disability, ethics, minority rights, the environment, ethnic voices, hobbies, New Zealand bicultural focuses, current affairs, religion, and of course, animal rights. These categories are all represented in the access sector, often driven by passionate people who really want to make a difference. These people want to change society for the better, and they have been given a voice to begin to make that happen. In presenting Safe and Sound every week, we make it clear that we're on the side of the animals, the voiceless, sentient beings who are so dreadfully exploited by us, we who should be their caretakers. We try to keep our finger on the pulse, and indeed, we've predicted transformational change in animal agriculture in this country for more than 2 years now, and with every passing day, we see more evidence of it. Personally, I wish the government would begin to take this trend away from raising animals for food seriously and help farmers to transition to crop-based agriculture, or to diversify or move off the land if they choose to. Now's the time to act, not when the situation becomes critical. So just a shout out there to Free FM and their very supportive staff and all the other access stations for broadcasting our show and for the wonderful work that you do in your communities. Thank you for enabling us to make a difference. So on to today's guest. Berend Westerer graduated from Queensland University with a veterinary science degree in 1969 and did a further Bachelor of Divinity from Melbourne. For many years he worked from his own practice at Lynfield in Auckland, and he also worked as the vet for Kelly Tarleton's and was a consultant at Auckland Zoo for many years as well. For the past 40 years, he's been the vet for New Zealand Bird Rescue and has a strong interest in bird health and all wildlife, including sea turtles, dolphins, whales and seals. He is currently working for Care Vets in Glenedin in Auckland. Kia ora, Berend. Thanks for coming on the show.
Kia ora, Sandra.
So, Berend, tell us why you decided to become a vet.
I guess ever since a child, I've had quite a lot of empathy and passion for animals. I was one of eight kids, and certainly all my life I've really loved animals, and in return they've often loved me back. We're a very poor family. I was the only child who had a dog and a cat and birds. So there's always this sort of connection I had, this connectivity I had with animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in New Zealand, Bernd?
No, I grew up in Holland.
Right.
And then Australia, and then, you know, migrated to New Zealand, I guess.
Right. I was interested to see that you've done a divinity degree.
Yes, I have. My father was a minister of divinity, and in some ways, because of the way I was, I guess there seemed to be the expectation that I would be doing the same with my life. And in order for me to clear up what I really was about, and I'd always been about animals, I did a divinity degree to just see whether this is where I needed to go.
Right. You haven't furthered that aspect at all in your career?
I was a hospital chaplain. Yeah, I certainly was a youth elder. But that is, yes, things have changed since then.
Right, right. Now, I first met you years ago when I was a volunteer at New Zealand Bird Rescue, and you were, and I think you still are, their vet. Really a lifetime of looking after animals and, in particular, of wildlife and birds. When did your specialist interest in birds begin?
I guess mainly through Lynn McDonald, who's the starter of New Zealand Bird Rescue,
yes,
or one of the founders. She used to come to me and tell me what to do, which is not unlike her. And, I mean, the problem was that she would go and see other vets and they would feel obliged, either through their work or whatever, to charge her a normal consult fee.
Mm.
And I felt that this was unfair, that although vets need to live and their bosses need to make money, that, you know, this was not possible, that wildlife should be treated differently. So I initially started, I think, charging a $2 a bird. No, initially I started charging nothing at all.
Right.
And then realised I got so many birds that I needed to charge something. So
right.
For wild birds, I would charge $2 a bird just to reduce the flow to some extent and get them to do as much as possible for themselves.
I see.
And that's continued ever since. And my contract with Care Vets in Glen Eden, part of the contract was that I could see wildlife for free.
Mm.
And any drugs and things I used, of course, I had to charge for. Any surgery I had to do, I had to charge for at reduced rates. But I would be able to see them for nothing.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And that's how I learnt, really.
Yes.
It wasn't that I was particularly good at anything. I just saw so many of them that I learnt more about them and learnt to appreciate them, learnt to really enjoy being able to fix something up and allow it to go back into the wild.
Yes.
That would be the ultimate aim.
It's such a wonderful feeling, isn't it, Bernd, to release
so
a bird
too.
Back into the wild. I've done a few of them myself. Of course, as you know, I was a volunteer at Bird Rescue and also know the wonderful Lynn very well. But when you trained, did you train on birds at all?
We did, but very. I think it was a one day lecture.
Goodness.
When you consider it, I mean, veterinary science and human science, I guess, is commercially driven in the sense that in order to make a living, you need to make an income, and birds have never in the past been considered part of that income, and so commercial flock teaching was there. On how to look after commercial chook flocks and things. But pet birds was not so much of an interest and a subject to be concerned about.
Mm.
It's not that vets weren't interested. It's not that students weren't interested. It's just that on the run of things that, you know, you had to look after the people that came to you, and the people that came to you were mainly people with dogs. Even cats were not considered worth working on.
Goodness.
It was really interesting because people would say, well, we can get a cat for nothing.
Yeah.
Why should we bother coming in to see looking after the animal?
Mm.
And then, of course, the realization was, well, really, the cat's part of my family, so
I
should be looking after the cat, and money's only money after all.
Mm.
And people have changed their attitude towards birds as well. Now, there's an attitude, well, the bird's part of my family,
yes,
and so I should look after it as well as I can.
I'm pleased to hear about that, because caged birds, you know, a lot of people might get a bird for the child for Christmas or something and then realise that it's a lot of work, or it's noisy, or it's messy, and
yeah,
it's not really treated as a loved member of the family.
But yes,
it's not that they're maltreated, but their needs are definitely not met, and I think a lot of birds are in tiny little cages. So what do you have to say about caged birds? What would you like to see different?
What I'd like to see different about all animals, really, is that the animals' needs are being met, that animals aren't there just to provide for our needs. You know, like the dog that's tied up on a chain all day outside in the backyard and never gets exercised or any interest shown in him.
Mm.
I mean, that's a dreadful situation.
Mm.
And the same with birds. They shouldn't be just sitting in a cage being bored out of their brains.
No.
They're very intelligent creatures. They have need for fresh water, they have need for clean food, they have need for exploring, they have need for flying.
Mm.
All of these things are an important part of who they are.
Yes.
And I think if we really appreciate the world we're in, we appreciate that different creatures have different needs, and we should always be there to fulfil them as much as we can.
I know that birds who are neglected, they can become depressed and they can begin to pluck out their feathers to self-mutilate. I rang you quite recently, you may recall, Berend, because I was concerned about my parrot, my 15-year-old Galarani Pink, and he had started some strange behaviour. He was standing on his wings and sort of rocking backwards and forwards, and I rang and I said, look, what's happening? And you rightly, you pinpointed, because I had just clipped his wings a bit just to keep him safe so he couldn't fly away when he was out with me in the garden and so on. And you said it affects their self-esteem, and I was, I don't know, it sort of, it really touched me. And so you don't think that we should clip birds' wings?
I think an essential part of being a bird is flying.
Yes.
And that's not true of all birds. Of course, you've got the kakapo that doesn't fly.
Yes.
And you've got ostriches that don't fly.
Mm.
But their escape mechanism is through flight.
Yes.
Their way of keeping safe is through flight. Their ability to coordinate sight and balance and ability to understand the danger they're in is the initial thing is flight. So they think on the wing. Their first initial reaction to anything that could be dangerous is to fly, and then think about it and say, hey, this isn't really quite so dangerous, so they fly back to wherever they came from. So their whole brain coordination, their whole brain development depends on their flying. Birds that are not allowed to fly, particularly when they're young, lose out on all this brain development. And it actually can be shown that there is a different development in their brain, and their brain is quite different to a bird that has learned to fly.
Like domestic pet birds, caged birds. Yes.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? Mm.
And I think breeders are coming to recognise now that taming birds by clipping their wings when they're young is all well and good, and you can tame them faster. But at the same time, you're losing out a lot of bird brain development. And the bird's losing out on security.
Yeah.
I mean, their security is being able to evaluate things on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't do that, they're stuck. It's like having kids who aren't allowed to walk. You know, it's wrong. It's just wrong on so many different levels.
Yeah. So what advice do you have to any of our listeners who maybe have pet birds? How can they enrich the life of their pet, their cockatiel or their galah, their budgie or canary or whatever? How can their lives be enriched at the same time as keeping them safe and happy? Because if you open the door of their cages and they fly out, they probably wouldn't last too long. Is that right?
No, if they're flying outside, although you can teach birds to come back from free flight, but that takes quite a lot of training.
Mm.
I think all caged birds should be allowed to fly around. I mean, it's their basic exercise, it's their basic way of using their brains, their sight, decision-making, all of these things are part of flight. And to have a bird that's trapped in a cage is wrong. So yes, you do have to keep the environment safe, like the windows and doors should be shut if the bird's out flying.
Right.
But it's possible to do that.
Yes, of course, yes. I've done it for years and years and years with my birds. Now, wildlife. Wildlife is incredibly important to you, Berend, and
yes,
presumably you're interested in protecting our birds and our other wildlife from so-called pests. Now, it's a little bit of a touchy subject with us because as an animal rights show, we don't use the word pest. We would take a position against predator-free 2050, would propose instead compassionate conservation methods instead of 1080 and the other wholesale eradication and slaughter that, you know, controlling so-called pests involves. So what's your standpoint on this, Berend?
Mine's probably a bit different to yours, although I feel it's we're the ones that have brought these animals here,
yes,
and we should take responsibility for that.
Yes.
I also feel that we've moved into an environment which was very specific and very special, where a lot of birds lived safe lives, had ground nests, all sorts of these things that without predators. And if we ever want to value the life that we have here in New Zealand, we need to do something about controlling the life that will kill them. And I think even in the Waitakeries, we've noticed the enormous difference that possum control has made on the bird life here.
Mm-hmm.
That now you wake up to a dawn chorus, whereas
right,
10 years ago you didn't.
Right.
And it's not just birds, it's geckos, wekas, all these precious things that are developed over the centuries
right,
in New Zealand that will be killed by rats and stoats
mm,
and other creatures like this, wildcats. And I don't know that there's an easy answer. I mean, I treat these animals individually as well and
mm,
consider them precious.
Yes.
At the same time, I know that if we allow them to continue on
mm,
the way they are,
mm,
we've had, 50 birds that have become extinct since the Europeans have arrived. And this will continue on
mm,
because it's not possible to have the two living in harmony with each other. For us to live in harmony with the environment we're in, we're going to have to make sacrifices and somehow work out a way in which it's possible for our natural animals, birds and reptiles and things that are native to New Zealand
mm,
to be able to survive, which they can't at the moment.
Yeah. There are an increasing number of scientists who are pointing to other ways of allowing the two to coexist. And I think it does come under the heading of compassionate conservation. But I myself don't know a great deal about it, although we're planning a show in the next few weeks. But that's very interesting to hear your point of view, Berend. Now, you're there in Piha, lucky you, right on the shoreline. You also have a strong interest in marine wildlife. Have you noticed over the years any climate change induced or pollution induced differences in the shoreline?
Well, I think I've worked with sea turtles and I've worked with seals and I've worked with dolphins and whales as well. And of course, the pollution that we cause has made a big difference to them. They haven't learned to distinguish between plastic bags
no,
and jellyfish and
no,
stuff like this.
Mm.
It had made a difference. And of course, it's obvious from Attenborough's films and things that the melting of the ice has made a difference as far as polar bears and creatures
yeah,
like this, walruses and that are concerned.
Mm.
What I've certainly noticed is there's many, many more wildlife that comes in with blockages due to plastic materials
yeah,
that we use
mm,
and that we just throw out.
Yeah. Fortunately, some of the supermarket chains are phasing out plastic bags. But yes, we definitely need to act on that one because plastics, remember in sort of way back in the 50s, there was hardly any plastic. It was only really
yeah,
in the 80s that we started to use
yeah,
plastic bags. But
yeah,
of course, where do they go when we don't want them anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
They're just out in the environment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
time's gone too quickly, Berend, but finally, I'd just like to mention New Zealand Bird Rescue, who do such wonderful work. And you mentioned Lynn before,
yeah,
who for so many years working as a solo mum, she turned her garage and even her house over to sick and orphan birds. And then a bequest allowed her to move into a larger property in West Auckland, there where they are now. And thankfully, Lynn's beginning to phase down her 24/7 vigils to help birds. But she has a vision, and I know that you share Lynn's vision of a wildlife hospital. Wouldn't that be so wonderful, Berend?
It would be tremendous. But it'll only happen if enough of the public who actually bring in, and they bring in about 5,000 birds a year, if enough of them realise that this doesn't happen on its own. It happens because we take responsibility for them.
Mm.
And that by donating money for a cause like this, we can help improve the situation.
Yeah.
To show caring in society, and it's wonderful that people show caring by bringing in injured animals that could go back to the wild once they're healed. But it also means that we have to take more responsibility than just bringing the animals in, and I wouldn't discourage anyone from bringing an animal in, but we also need to take financial responsibility for this.
Yes.
That it costs money to do this.
Of course.
And Lynn has been a Trojan in that she's done this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and worked endlessly for nothing almost.
Yes.
And there's not that many dedicated people around that would do that.
No.
And we've got to make it commercially viable to be able to do that, because it's part of our environment that we have caused, the damage that we've caused to the environment that causes most of these animals to come in.
Yes.
And it's propeller damage on penguins. It's all these sort of things that we need to take responsibility for.
Mm.
Leaving hooks with bait on them out for birds to swallow and then be trapped. All of these things are just so important for us to take responsibility for and to teach our children to say, hey, this is our environment.
Yes.
Let's keep it as good as possible for the wildlife we see around us.
Absolutely. The other thing too is that, you know, if anyone's listening and they'd like to bequest some money for a wildlife hospital to New Zealand Bird Rescue, I'll put up some information on my Facebook page.
Oh, because, that'd be wonderful.
Because anyone can make out a will. It would be a wonderful thing if people could support this vision of a wildlife hospital there in West Auckland. And of course, Berend, you and Lynn would have been instrumental in making that happen. Now, I'm just going to have the last word now. I don't know if I've told you the story or not, but once I said to a friend of mine that I was taking my birds to see Berend Westerer, who is New Zealand's best avian vet, and she said, no, he isn't. She said, he's New Zealand's best vet, period.
That's very kind of her, but it's not quite true, but there you go. I certainly want to do my best because I'm passionate about animals, and that's why I'm still working, because I just enjoy my job so much.
Yes.
And I know that I can bring improvement in the lives of animals, and that's what motivates me.
Yes, and as you say, they're precious. They're precious when they're our pets, and they're precious when they're in the wild.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Berend.
You're welcome.
Hope to talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our thanks to Berend, and long may he continue the work that he does for all precious animals. I'd like to dedicate this show to Berend and also to the admirable Lynn MacDonald QSM. And if you would like to find out more about giving a bequest to Bird Rescue in order to enable them to achieve their vision of a wildlife hospital, then I'll put up some links and other information on our Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. We'll go out on a classic song from the film Mary Poppins, sung by Julie Andrews. It's called Feed the Birds, and that's a jolly good idea, actually. I'll put up some links with some tips on how to turn your backyard into a feeding station for the little winged angels, and at the same time keeping them safe from your cats. And remember, as the weather gets hotter, they're going to be thirsty, so don't forget to fill up your bird baths. Until next time, ka kite. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Safe and Sound on Free FM 89.0, broadcast Mondays at 5:30 p.m. and repeated at 10:30 a.m. Tuesdays and 6:30 a.m. Wednesdays. Podcasts are available through freefm.org.nz, accessradio.org, and through iTunes.
Of St. Paul's, the little old bird woman comes in her own special way to the people. bags full of crumbs. Come feed the little bird, show them you care, and you'll be glad if you do. Their young ones are hungry, their nests are so bare, all it takes is tuppence from you. The birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Feed the birds, that's what she cries, while overhead her birds fill the skies. All around the cathedral, saints and apostles look down as she sells her wares. Although you can't see it, you know they are smiling each time someone shows that he cares. Though her words are simple, listen, listen, she's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. She's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag.